This is the I Read Comic Books podcast. I'm Tia, your host for this very special mini-sode. We asked our amazing listeners to make donations in support of the protests calling for racial justice, and a huge thanks to Mariah Ludwig for unlocking this interview with Stephanie Hans, who is the artist of the incredible series Die from Image, co-created with Karen Gillan. And she's also done work for Marvel and Dark Horse and I feel like you've done pretty much all of it, haven't you, Stephanie?
I did. And certainly a few of the ones that you don't know because they're French.
Oh, right. We should definitely just do another episode about like French stuff.
Oh, my God. This will be a long one because there's so much to say about it. Not a lot of good things, though.
Oh, well, then it'll be a spicy episode. So, some people may not have read Die. And for those of you who are unfamiliar with it, the premise is that there is a group of teenagers in the 90s and they're playing a game, an RPG sort of similar to Dungeons and Dragons, but completely original. And they sort of get whisked into the world of the game Jumanji style. And then a handful of years later, most of them return back to the real world, except for one. And then years later, as adults, they all kind of get sucked back into it. And it's very beautiful and very dramatic. And there's also the actual game that you can play that Karen and Stephanie developed. And so fingers crossed that it doesn't actually whisk anyone away, because the couple of times I've played Die, it's gone to some pretty crazy worlds. I don't know about you, Stephanie.
Well, to be honest, I only played once with Karen, actually. I think it was still beta testing it, but that was actually very entertaining. Yeah.
Was it the time in New York Comic Con where you guys came to Comixology?
That was actually super fun.
Yeah, we got eaten by like giant coffee makers, I think, or something. It was,
and yeah, like every good game to which I ever played, everything turned burnt in the end.
It's true. Yes, we turned to murder very fast in that game. So, I mean, you're a nerd, like going way back, right?
I wouldn't say I was a nerd. I was a geek, for sure. Nerd was a bit too techy for me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, like definitely a geek. Like there was no word for geek when I was a geek. I've seen every bad movie that became cult later. And I begged my mother to offer me the whole collection of Stephen King and the one he wrote under Richard Bachman. Before, when I was 14. Took me a couple of months to read everything.
Do you bring that element of kind of geek nostalgia when you're doing your work on Die?
Well, pretty much, because there is some nostalgia in Die, especially when it comes to the design. The design of each character is based on the way they saw themselves back in the 90s. And so, you know, a lot of these costumes are directly created out of popular movies, for example, or characters. Like the main character has a dress which is directly inspired by the dress from Legend.
I thought so.
Yeah, directly inspired, really. Straight out of it.
Love that dress. I both the original and your interpretation of it. Love that dress.
Thank you. And there are also, like, you know, it's always funny when people talk to me about it, because sometimes I forget, but one of the characters has his whole design inspired by George Michael, you know, during the Faith album. And it was just so bling bling and everything. You know, most of these characters would hate those designs now, but they are still stuck with it.
Well, you're the boss of them, so.
Yeah, like it's my aim to be able to design them in the way that they would like right now. I already started to do some changes, like obviously for Ash.
That was stunning. Like I gasped when I saw that.
Thank you. It was inspired by fashion designer Obeka.
I will have to look that up.
Yeah, it's like dreamy dresses, really.
But I feel like, you know, I was a big fan of like the 1602 Angela costume that you designed. And I mean, I feel like there is such attention to detail and you could really see the real world influences. Like the costumes that you design make a lot of sense, I think.
I tried to, you know, for me, it was always very frustrating when I had to draw a character that I like otherwise, like for Marvel. I remember like once there was a character and I asked directly the editors, like, okay, this is Metal Penty. How does she do it? And I was literally answered magic.
Yeah.
And, no, that doesn't make sense. What about chefing? What about, yeast infection?
You know, I a long time ago did a cosplay of Angela and the boots. Like, how do you have over the knee metal boots?
I know. You know, when I was drawing her, I would actually add an articulation. But
I know.
I had so many cosplayers writing me about it. Like, how do they work? It's like, I don't know. I didn't design them.
Yeah, I think what I ended up doing is, yeah, I had like two separate pieces. And so, and it was like from the knee down. And then a part came up over the thigh so that when I bent my knee, it would lift up.
you really didn't have any choice with this.
Oh, it was like a nightmare to figure that out. And it was a false front too. I did the front to look like metal and then the back was just stretch PVC because she has this, the butt skirt covers up a multitude of sins.
That too. That must not be comfortable.
It was not.
So, you know, when I did the designs for 1602, I really had a lot of fun because it was the first time I was trusted to actually do original costumes. And I have a lot of reference books at home. So I just opened them and like, I browsed them for a while. I really love that, doing the reference work. You know, it's just hard work. You just open the books and put a lot of post-its everywhere. It's like, oh.
I was going to ask you about that because I know that Kieran does a ton of research when he's writing these books. And I was wondering, what your process for that is, because he seems like he's pretty collaborative. And so like his research isn't necessarily something you have to follow and that you're, you know, kind of free to make your own contribution. So how do you approach that?
Well, rather instinctively, I would say. So Kieran basically comes with ideas that are in the same time sharp and vague. You know, like, oh, this is a robot with the kind of outfit that you can have in the army, in the Prussian army, in First World War, you know.
Right.
And this is in the same time very vague and very precise, you know. And so I will just try to make it work. And honestly, I wouldn't say why it works, but I think it's the same. I was using this analogy a few days ago. Like if you ask two artists or three or as many as you want, really, to draw a cat, like any cat, the cat, something that's the most catty cat ever. And they will all draw a different cat.
Right.
And I think for me, it's the same. It's like, you ask me to draw a robot, I will draw the robot. But in the end, it's still mine.
We've talked a little bit before, just, you know, between the two of us about your style and how distinctive it is. And it's really effective at conveying emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And so is that something that you really set out consciously to do when you developed your style, or did it kind of evolve along with you as you grew into being an artist?
I think, well, I cannot talk for everyone, but for me at least, as a growing artist or as a young adult, I was quite solitary. And I used to, I put a lot of myself in each drawing, you know, and telling me myself a lot of stories about the characters I was drawing. And I was always impersonating them, sometimes even creating dialogues and like sub stories. And so I don't know if it's really conscious, but each time I draw something, like my coworkers, they are always very amused by it, because I do a lot of of faces when I draw, because I always am so much into it that I'm acting the scene, you know?
Right. That's so interesting. Do you find in general that you're like a very kinesthetic person? I mean, I've spent time with you. You have a lot of energy, but some people, they're more, the way that they learn is they have to be more active and stuff like that. Is that kind of how you?
I'm a sponge, really. So there is this thing. I cannot recognize people. I have what they call prosopagnosia.
Yes.
But apparently all that free space in my head is taken by everything else. I have I don't have idyllic memory, but I can still recite some parts of books that I read that I really like, you know?
And yeah. So
I just remember a whole lot of everything I see, but not the faces.
Right. No, we've discussed. I can never change my hair. I'm going to just wear my spiky tiara every time I see you.
Oh, please.
Yeah, that's I've sat next to you while you've painted before, and it's really incredible to see how you bring these characters to life. And I know that when you're like at conventions and doing commissions, you work in watercolors. What are your favorite mediums to work with?
I do love watercolors. Really, it's very, very lively, and it's very forgiving. You know, you can always come back to it. The one I use, at least.
I don't think I've ever heard anyone say watercolors are forgiving.
Well, yeah, maybe it's just the way I use them. But I'm not exactly using watercolors. I'm using watercolor inks, which is not exactly the same. It's liquid.
Uh-huh.
And so you can actually put layers over layers and never get grainy or brownish. So it is quite forgiving.
Well, I have always really admired the very vivid colors in your paintings, so that makes a lot of sense. Do you think that you would ever attempt watercolor sequentials?
I actually did a while ago, but it takes so much time.
Yeah.
It would work if I could only do characters, but I cannot do backgrounds with watercolors. It becomes too much.
I'm sure. Yeah. We would need to hire you like an atelier of background people to apprentice, like in the Renaissance.
Nice.
Or the manga studios.
Minions!
Oh, yes. You're minions. Yes.
I love minions.
They're very handy.
Mm-hmm.
So do you feel like you have to switch to different parts of your brain when you work on covers versus sequentials? I will say you're one of my favorite cover artists.
Well, it's definitely not the same work. It's not the same as... So basically, there is for sequential sketching and painting. Sketching takes all my concentration. I cannot listen to anything. I cannot do anything else than just sketching. I really need to be 100% focused. This is the same process as the cover, like creating the cover. Now, for the painting, I can actually binge watch shows while I paint, because this is just application of techniques. And I'm not thinking about anything. Like, it's, how can I say? Basically, if I don't binge watch something on the side, I get bored while I paint.
Right.
Yes, because it's really just technique. So my brain gets, like, it wanders, and suddenly I think about something, and suddenly I need to Google it. So if, and yeah. I use 4 hours, because there is nothing that just takes 5 minutes. It doesn't exist with me. So I need to watch something on the side. Otherwise, I cannot work for a very long time.
Go ahead.
No, and for the cover is the same. So when I'm creating cover, so it's still not a process, but it's a process where I need to think about like 100%. It depends on the cover. So basically, you have some covers that are more like pinups, like you know, just one character, very simple background,
right?
Iconic. This is what you do the most for variant covers. Now for regular covers, that's another process, because you're going to be there for a long time, like 4, 5, 6 covers. So you need to talk about the story inside the book. And what you want to do when you do a cover is you want to call the reader, but not any reader. The right reader, the one that would be interested in that kind of book. Then you have the composition. You need to have something that can be seen from far away, let's say. I need to have a cover that works in thumbnails, because very often people will see it in a rack and they won't have the time, you know, when you just browse things. Like, if it's not very easy to read from far away, again, it's too much information and they will just skip it. Then you have also the meaning. Like, you need to tell enough of the story to make it entertaining, but also leave some room for serendipity or something. And then you also have the, you know, every period has some kind of trend.
And right. Be
aware of what is happening with other publishers or other titles, because your book is going to be in the middle of a whole lot of covers, and people need to be able to see it even in the middle of them. So that's the job of a cover artist. That's really another job.
I feel like you should like teach a course on how to make great covers, because that, you know, that's all very thoughtful and methodical, and I think would help a lot of people that are trying to practice, you know, covers.
Yeah. I was not a very instinctive artist, so I had to think a lot about it. Like Basically, I had facilities with composition and colors. So, of course, covers was a good niche for me. But I had to really think about what would make it work. And this is my recipe, at least.
Well, I think it's been great, because if you ask me to name some of my favorite covers, like, I immediately think of a lot of The Journey in a Mystery and things like that. And the die covers, like, they're so architectural, that design with the deconstructed die and how the colors, you know, and the, like, I guess almost negatives sometimes.
Yes.
with the colors, like, it's all really complex. Can you talk a little about kind of formulating the style of the die covers?
So basically, when we decided to work on a title together and we knew what would be in the book with Karen, I knew from the beginning that I wanted to put the dies directly on the cover, like something hidden in full sight, in a way. For two reasons. The same way that Kieran writes Die on the cover and knows that people won't understand that it's a dice.
Right.
And it's exactly the same in a way. But also it makes the cover very easy to identify and very easy to spot. So it works very well in any case. And it also makes the cover very graphical, which is a good thing because my drawings are a bit too intricate for t-shirts, but don't cut out the shape of the deconstructed dice. So that works.
Always got to think about the merchandising too.
Yeah, I thought a lot about it.
I saw someone had like printed and cut it up and like made the die. It was pretty neat.
A few people do that, and they will be always a bit disappointed because I cheated a bit. It would not exactly fit the size of a comic book cover, so I had to elongate it a bit. Not really a tiny bit, but just enough for when you try to fold it properly, it won't be proper.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. The first time I saw someone do it, I asked Karen, how long will it take? Do you think it would take to people to realize it's not their fault?
Well, hopefully they'll listen to this episode and they'll understand.
They call that like poetic license.
Exactly. I think that, and if you're doing it for a valid reason, like you need it to fit on the cover, that's a valid reason. That's different than just being bad at your job.
Otherwise, there would be like a part of the cover that would be empty. That would be nice.
No, yeah, of course. You have to have like an aesthetic balance. I think you did it was a good decision, I think.
Yeah, it was really funny, actually, because basically when I decided to put the dice on the cover, I downloaded several, basically there are a couple of models for deconstructed D20. And one of them is just like a line with a few dents. And the other one looks like two Jewish stars. So it was like neither of them would work. And so it took me an afternoon, a pair of scissors and a lot of patience. But that was a good thing because this way I was also sure it was our design. And nobody could say, oh, you stole my origami or something.
Right. Well, I mean, I feel like I'm so constantly blown away by how thoughtful every element is that you put into your artwork. And it really shows. And I'm so excited that you're on like a book and doing sequentials because they're just lovely to see. And, you know, you really need, I think, a style like yours to carry you through such an emotional story.
Yeah, I guess so. It's very gothic. Sometimes a bit too black, maybe, but it is
impossible. Impossible. So, it's kind of a bummer that there's no travel right now. There's no conventions right now. Are you just sort of plugging away at the third arc of Die for now?
Yeah, but definitely. I'm at the office every day, even the weekends now. I'm working very hard. That's a good thing. You know, it keeps your mind busy. There are a lot of strange things happening in life right now. So it's good to be busy.
It is. But, you know, make a little time for some work-life balance in there if you can.
Yeah, I actually bought myself an Oculus Quest.
I saw you were posting about that. How's that going?
That's just insane. You know, at first I only bought it to do some 3D painting. Like I started to do the costumes of Dai in 3D. And so, like, I'm going to publish them at the moment or another. It's very funny to do. And this is exactly why I bought it. But then I downloaded Beat Saber, and that was a mistake, but a good one.
Well, I'm glad that you're finding ways to stay, you know, entertained.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you know, also living in France, where there are a lot of cafes and terraces everywhere. So it's still a bit weird because you can still see that people wear masks, not everywhere, but when you go in shops or in restaurants, you still have to wear masks. It's like almost like before, not exactly. Cinemas are actually opening in a couple of days.
Yeah, there's, I think that we're getting onto phase two of the openings here in New York, but I still refuse to leave my apartment. I don't trust anybody out there. Not enough people are wearing masks to make me comfortable enough to go out. So I'm still getting groceries delivered, and I bought a little miniature stepper machine so I could get my steps in my apartment.
Yeah, I almost bought one, to be honest.
It's great. I highly recommend it. But, you know, yeah, I do miss out there. I miss you guys, miss my friends.
I miss conventions. So
I know.
No, it's like one of the only places in the world where you can actually go, like, fully dressed, like, you know, dressed up to the nine. Like, yes. Really.
And however you want.
Yeah, you cannot do that anywhere anymore. Even in weddings, people are like, oh, it's a casual. What do you mean casual? Like, what's the point? Like, at least give me a wedding to wear, like, my super nice dresses. Like, I can do that in conventions.
I promise if I ever have a wedding, it will be the most formal occasion that we can put together. Just for you. Just for you.
I will come with my chrome. Maybe my feathers too. No, you are not supposed to outdress the bride, but you can never be outdressed.
You know, well, I appreciate that. But really, I think I just would be happy to have all my friends together for a party. We'll just throw a wedding, but nobody's actually getting married. And we'll all just get dressed up and buy a big cake and dance.
Let's do that next time.
Yeah, that's going to be our next convention party, is a wedding for no one.
Oh, I wish it would be tomorrow.
I know. We'll make it happen.
Yes.
So before we wrap things up, I'll just mention to everyone that volumes 1 and 2 of Die are available, and issue 11 will be out at some point later this summer, I think.
Yeah, actually, you just got my icons yesterday.
Oh, great. Okay. Oh, I actually am seeing June 24th, which is, as of this recording, pretty soon. So cool. And where can people find you on the internet if they were so inclined to follow you and keep track of all your amazing work?
These days, I'm only on Twitter and maybe Instagram because I have too much work. And I don't post a lot on Facebook, and I closed my website, but I'm going to rebuild it.
Okay.
That's the promise.
I'll put a link to your social media in the show notes if people want to check it out.
Sure.
Well, Stephanie, I miss you. Thank you so much for spending some time, and thank you again to Mariah for unlocking the episode.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
I will see you at the wedding.
It will never be soon enough.
No.